Yes, they do. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. We're starting even 1 minute early, which has got to be good news given the way in which some recent meetings have been going. I've asked the panellists if they will all restrict their introductory comments to literally 3 minutes. Now, that normally means they'll speak for double that, but even if they misbehave badly, we should be left with a decent amount of time for what I hope can be a truly interactive session. Looking around the audience, you might not yet... Ilya, how very nice to see you. You might not necessarily yet be that numerous, but there's an awful lot of knowledge in the room, so I think it would be good, gentlemen, panellists. And by the way, ladies, I'm sorry we don't have a lady panellist. That's entirely my fault, but all the ladies, or most of the ladies, seem to be busy elsewhere. I'm going to ask my colleagues here to start off. I'm going to ask Yanis Karklins, whom you all know, to lead off with a bit of a historical on the WSIS process, and then Alejandro will talk about the multi-stakeholder progress and some of the some of the scheduling issues we've seen with the IGF. And then, if I'm getting this right, Marcus will talk about the current institutional arrangements, the work that's being done in the CSTD leading towards the two meetings of some importance in New York this year. All of this to be seen in the context of where we're going on IGF renewal. Then Jeff's going to talk about encouraging greater industry involvement. And finally, Bill Graham will talk about whatever Bill Graham's going to talk about, which is basically the negotiation which we're going to have to head into, because we can't just expect the IGF as we know and love it to be repeated as it is. We're going to have to look at some, at least, of the details and resist others who will want to change more of it than most of us would like to see. We've also got remote participation going on, and Bahir's in charge of that, so he's going to wave at me when he's got some questions. Yanis, can I hand the floor to you?
Yeah, thank you, Nick. The history is rather long if we are looking into internet calendar. So it started about 6.5 years ago, or maybe 7 years ago, when the intergovernmental negotiations of the first phase of the World Summit failed to reach comprehensive agreement on the questions related to internet governance, and they decided that further work is necessary, and they established the Working Group on Internet Governance, otherwise known as WGIG. And about 40 people who were in one way or another involved in internet-related issues worked together under the leadership of Nitin Desai and produced a comprehensive report on which served as a textbook for intergovernmental negotiations during the second phase of the World Summit. It was clearly understood that the issues related to internet governance do not have a natural home in UN, United Nations system, among UN's system organizations. And it was felt that we need to find an appropriate forum where issues related to internet governance would be addressed after the end of the World Summit. And in this respect, the analogy or idea of the World Economic Forum annual meeting in Davos came to mind of some of the people who were involved in negotiations. And it was suggested that apart from institutional follow-up in the United Nations system, there would be also a new platform created, which was suggested to call Internet Governance Forum, again with the direct analogy of World Economic Forum, which would allow stakeholders on equal footing in informal manner address all issues related to internet governance. And I think that is a very successful decision. And in reality, World Economic Forum annual meeting exists already 40 years, and as a model has proven its sustainability. Industry, governments, actors, everybody who considers themselves somebody on this planet pay a lot of money to go there and to rub shoulders. The high degree of the intellectual debate is taking place, but no decisions are made. Instead, all those decision makers go back home and do their decision making where it should be done. Exactly the same philosophy was put in the world in the IGF from its creation. That did not exclude that international organizations like ITU, like UNESCO, like United Nations Commission on Economic Social Affairs address those issues in intergovernmental setting during their sessions. But IGF remains as a standalone discussion platform where everybody can come and talk about issues which are on their minds. So that's a bit of a history. Seems that 5 years it has worked pretty well, if not very well. We have a number of copycats in different regions, in different countries, and I sincerely believe that this model works and should be continued as long as this debate on internet governance is needed.
Yanis, thank you very much. A good introduction, I think, and one new idea, the idea that perhaps we should try and follow the Davos example of charging people to come to the IGF to rub shoulders with each other. That strikes me as a novel thought. But it leads us very well into Alejandro, who's going to talk about the importance of the multi-stakeholder model as we now know it.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation to be here. Thanks, Bacher Esmet, for the organizing effort. I don't know if you can hear me well through the microphone. I'll just rub elbows with you, as Nick has said.
Pay for it.
The multi-stakeholder model is an extremely important change in the way things are being done worldwide, in particular with respect to the internet. But there's a previous precedent that, and more important, I think, is that this model, as has started working on the internet, can also be studied and translated to other organizations or to other issues. And finding multi-stakeholder models to solve it. The word stakeholder came into being, and the idea of different stakeholders coming together with this wording came through the World Summit on Information Society. Many of the leaders of those discussions are at this table. It arose also without that name. I think I would say, using the French phrase, avant la lettre, in the build-up of the organizations that work, that actually do some work directly on the internet, like the IETF and later ICANN. These organizations started actually bringing different groups of stakeholders together, defining what a stakeholder is, how much of a stake you have to have in the system to be known as a stakeholder and granted some form of organization, or how much you can build it yourself. The internet, at the beginning of this meeting on Monday, it was mentioned, it was quoted by Whitfield Diffie as being in ways like a city or like the sea. It's more than that, because it's being built, so the law, the code, and the technology are being built at the same time as the medium itself. And as it's being expanded, it's shaped in a very different way. We consider that we alter the sea, but it's there. basically whatever human action does slightly alters the oceans, whereas the internet may be shaped in a completely different way. So looking at the governance of the internet really requires the builders, the people who are actually shaping it, to constantly be at both layers, at the layer of building things, making things, expanding things, and at deciding how little governance is really needed. The diversity of views that the multi-stakeholder model brings together is amazing. There's no other adjective there. It is enormously enriching. One can see the same idea by people who would you think are the same stakeholder in the sense of being a technical community, coming from different geographies, being handled in a completely different way. And the synthesis of these ideas as it moves forward in these yearly cycles of the Internet Governance Forum and the many other forums where this is discussed is an enormous value. And this value comes from the freedom to decide on these ideas, to the freedom to speak on these ideas without having to negotiate a decision. There's also a couple of remarks here which are important. One of them is that if we compare very broadly an entity like the Internet Governance Forum and an entity like ICANN, one can see the huge gap that would have to be breached if the Internet Governance Forum were to reach any decision-making capabilities, if the Internet Governance Forum were to reach even recommendation capabilities. The whole setup of mechanisms to ensure representation, to ensure a voice for every type of stakeholder, and mechanisms to make sure that the decisions are made in a balanced, orderly way, and that there are mechanisms for appeal and redress for any mistakes that are made or any perceived mistakes, tells you that this is really a non-scalable effort. Finally, what's admirable in the Internet Governance Forum, I'll go back to this point in a second, to something I already said, the way ideas evolve and are created, discussed, and bounced around, but also the way this has a significant time lag between what happens in the Internet Governance Forum and what happens outside the Internet Governance Forum for a given issue. I've studied in the recent months the evolution of the handling of the concept of cybersecurity in the Internet Governance Forum. One can see that the discussion on Internet security was there long before even the WSIS took place. That means in the 1990s. And the word cybersecurity enters the Internet Governance Forum language only after its first 2 years. In the first 2 years, cybersecurity was 90% only in the ITU presentations and in people who were discussing in those presentations, and it only later spreads out, as it also happens outside. A comparison of issues being discussed in the general community concerned with security and those being discussed within the Internet Governance Forum speaks of a time lag of about 2 years. This doesn't mean that the Internet Governance Forum is irrelevant by picking issues and having them ripe for discussion after 2 years of existence or 2 years later than the community. It tells you that there will be a very important discussion at a higher layer with people who are not technically involved in the issues. They will have this broad overview. They will be able to consult and bounce this overview with people who are acting on the field. But that, again, a decision-making process will not be warranted. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alejandro. Lots of food for thought there. Marcus.
Thank you. Good morning. To go back to Tunis, it was a very momentous decision when heads of state and heads of government basically gave away a prerogative, that is, to discuss things among themselves. They opened the doors to other stakeholders, and unlike in the WSIS where the non-governmental stakeholders were asked to sit at the back of the room and were only given the floor after the governments had spoken in the IGF, they all participated as equals. The original mandate was for 5 years, and the heads of state and government asked the Secretary General to consult with forum participants on whether or not to continue the mandate, and these consultations took place at the last meeting in Sharm el-Sheikh. The result of this was there was an overwhelming support for continuing the mandate within existing parameters. And based on that, now the Secretary General made a report and asks, submits it to member states and recommends a continuation of the mandate for another 5 years. It was interesting, though, obviously, almost everybody who had anything to say in Sharm, and before Sharm we had a consultative process with written contributions, there were many ideas on how to improve. While a vast majority supported the character of the IGF as it is, that is with a non-decision-making mandate, there were also some who would like the IGF to go a little bit further and to produce what they often call concrete results. But I totally agree with what Alejandro just said. The character as a deliberative forum makes it more interesting, and by trying to produce recommendation, it would change the very nature of the forum. Now, there's an inherent paradox that the consultations were held in a multi-stakeholder format, but the decision will go back to member states, to governments, that is. A first discussion took place in the CSTD, the Commission on Science and Technology for Development, that is within the UN system, the body that is entrusted with follow-up and implementation of WISIS. The CSTD decided to set up a dedicated group to discuss on how to improve the workings of the IGF. This group hasn't started its work yet. It's a mandate given to the chairperson of the commission, and the chairperson will then set up such a group. Now, this may seem a paradox, as we have always had a sort of self improving process. No IGF was the same. Every IGF progressed, and we had a continuous reform discussion within the IGF. And now this discussion will also take place outside, but it will be it's an intergovernmental process, but the decision was also to ask other stakeholders to join. They're invited to join this process. And there may be well a merit to have such a process going, as it links what we do within the IGF to an intergovernmental process. And it is, we must not forget, it is the governments who will take in the end a decision on whether or not to continue the mandate. The next step will be the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations. They meet in New York in July, and the IGF is on their agenda, I think, on the 16th of July. And they will have to decide whether or not they adopt this decision coming from ECOSOC, and that package will then go to the General Assembly. What we can hope for from the General Assembly is that they take a binary decision, a yes or a no. If the General Assembly starts discussing the details of how the IGF should continue, then it might get a bit messy, and it could also be feared that General Assembly consisting of governments only, that the process would be made more governmental and less open and less multi-stakeholder. But to cut the long story short, I think the issue is no longer whether or not the IGF will continue. It will be more on how it will continue. Thank you.
Marcus, thank you very much. Lots of detailed points in there, which I think we must come back to when we finish these presentations. But let's keep moving on now, because I'm looking forward to getting views from the room. Jeff, can I ask you to say a few words about the approach of industry?
Yes, thank you. And it's great to be here today. And just as Marcus described how different the IGF multi-stakeholder process is from a government perspective, I would describe it as a very similar experience for industry and business. That, you know, traditionally we have viewed dealing with governments as an area where we are cautious and we have a lot at risk, and it tends to be it tended to be viewed in a regulatory context. So this has been a very different type of interaction, and I think we've come a long way over the 5 years in both the nature of the discussion and the trust that has developed in how we approach the issues, as well as the level of engagement in, you know, for example, as a U.S.-based company in thinking about these issues globally and getting more engaged in these issues outside of our own home countries. So I think it's seen a steady progression there in the level of involvement and in the discussion overall. In thinking about how to encourage more business participation, or why should business participate, I think there are a number of reasons. One is we have a lot to learn from this process. These are very complicated issues, and things are changing rapidly on the internet. And as Marcus said, the agenda for the IGS has changed every year to reflect that fact. So the more information and the more education that we are all doing, I think it benefits all of us. Secondly, these issues are really important to our customers, whether it's the basic issues of getting access to the internet and getting connected to the internet, dealing with openness and privacy and security issues, as well as the underlying infrastructure of the internet, which may be something that's a little bit further from the visibility of our customers. They are directly impacted by all of the discussions that we are having both at the IGF and at ICANN, and we need to be sensitive to that. And then finally, I think we need to realize, and I think business, it's a continuing education process, but I think business is gradually becoming more aware of the risk of the alternative, which is really more of a traditional regulatory framework for the internet. This is a new model. This is something that is in some ways revolutionary, and we all need to invest and support it to keep it sustainable. And I do feel like we're getting to a critical juncture, not just because of the renewal discussions of the IGF, but because the internet has taken on such economic and social importance now that I think we're going to see growing pressures or temptation to pull things into a more traditional framework. And so therefore, I think it's really an important time for business to do its part to invest in the multi-stakeholder process.
Jeff, thank you. That's very useful. The risks of the alternatives, I think, is a good phrase to take from what you've just been saying. Marcus spoke just now of the fact that we're probably okay in getting the IGF renewed by the United Nations, by governments in the United Nations, this fall. But the question is, what sort of IGF are we going to get? And that's what I've asked Bill Graham to talk about, because there are areas of the current methodology which will very definitely come under attack. Bill?
Thanks very much, Nick, and thanks to Beher and others who worked on organizing this. I thought I'd draw from these comments on a survey that we did within the Internet Society. For those who don't know, we have around 28,000 members around the world, 80 chapters, 5 regional bureaus, and about 100 organizational members. So it's a fairly broadly based organization. We did a survey this spring, and we got responses from 69 countries, not a huge number, around 140 or 150 responses. But it did give us, I thought, a fairly broadly based regional view of what people thought about the IGF. One of the questions we asked was what possible improvements there could be. And I was very pleased by the thoughtfulness of the responses, so I think I'll just convey those to you here very quickly and as a basis for discussion. First, our members thought there should be more weight for regional and national IGFs. This is something that's really been developing over the last 3-4 years, and I think very, very positive. It brings a wealth of experience at the level where people are really doing internet governance into the global forum, and a large amount of expertise. So I think that's a very practical suggestion to start to structure the global IGF more around around what's coming out of the regions through those IGFs. Secondly, to have a more focused discussion. Maybe in the first mandate, when it was possible the IGF would only run 5 years, there was a big rush to get every possible topic on the agenda every time so that it would all be covered in a certain sense. If we do, in fact, have the comfort of having another five-year mandate at a minimum, maybe it's time to step back and say, okay, let's really dig down and concentrate on some topic this year and try and be a little more focused, which would help a great deal with the another issue that was raised, which is increasing the visibility of the results. Again, as others have said, there is no appetite in among ISOC members, at least, for a decision-making forum, but there is a sense that the results could be used more effectively if we were more focused in the agenda. That also ties in with encouraging participation. The IGF is already quite a large global event, and the fact it has been held in different regions of the world has helped with diversifying participation. But I think everyone would agree that there is still a need to increase participation from the developing countries, and really all sectors, not just civil society, not just business, not just governments. We really need across-the-board representation from the developing world if we're going to have an effect. Finally, I guess, of the items that were identified, greater transparency of the multi-stakeholder advisory group. And this is something that's already being worked on. There's a consultation open at the moment on how to do that. One thing I would flag here in this context is the need to maintain a role for what we're calling the Internet technical community. That phrase is a bit of a leftover from the WSIS as well, and it's not particularly accurate because as you look around this room, while for IGF principles, we would all be called the Internet technical community, there's a tremendous diversity of views and interests here. Nonetheless, we're not all private sector, we're not all government, we're certainly not all multilateral institutions, we're not all civil society. So there is value to having the Internet community involved, I would say. All of these things would be good, in my view, as a focus for developing the IGF going forward, but it seems to me that there's one large prerequisite that we need to talk about, and that is funding. All these things are possible, but it takes money. A more focused planning process takes money. More developing country participation takes money. And I think it's safe to say that I'm a strong supporter of the current voluntary model, but people really do need to reach out to their colleagues, other organizations, and encourage increased funding to the IGF so that it actually can grow to become an even more effective organization. Thank you.
Bill, thank you. Thank you very much. That sounds like an extremely useful survey, if I may say so. We can presumably find it on your website.
On our website, yeah.
Yeah. Very useful and very mind-focusing. I think I conclude just one thing from this panel stage of our discussion. It's all about the multi-stakeholder model. You, this audience, here at this ICANN multi-stakeholder meeting, represent the multi-stakeholders. But, sadly or otherwise, it will be just governments who will make the vital decisions in New York at the end of this year. So if I may be so bold as to suggest that all of you, you multi-stakeholders, you need to be influencing your governments to make sure that your governments take the right decision in New York at the end of this year. There will be some outreach from various among us in this community will be going to New York to try and do some briefing or to do some briefings for delegations there and to try and raise the level of consciousness amongst government delegations. But it's in capitals where you can all work to help us by talking to your governments and making sure they're aware of the importance of the decision. Sorry, end of lecture from your moderator. I will now shut up. Can I seek questions or comments? Please.
Stefano Trumpi, member of the GAC in ICANN for Italy, but also being involved in ISOC as Italian chapter, I have the I should at least represent the internet community, local internet community opinions, and I concur with your recommendation, Mr. Chair, about the necessity of sensitizing the governments for this decision that has to be taken at ECOSOC and then the General Assembly, yes or no. But the real point is that I think that at least in Europe, there is a prevailing opinion that IGF should go on in a status of, let's say, improved status quo. Because, of course, we have to improve, but not to change the nature of the IGFs. This is very important. And if we look back at the Sharm el Sheikh meeting, then we found two opposites. On one side, those that are in favor of the improved status quo, and those that are saying that IGF should change its nature and becoming something different, more close to, let's say, intergovernmental, or having some decisions. And the extreme was the positions that we saw from Saudi Arabia and China. But I think that in the community, all the countries are confronting on also the governmental representatives on what is a prevailing opinion. So this is just the end of my comments, and just concurring with your recommendation 100%. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Stefano. Aisha?
Thank you. Aisha Hassan from the International Chamber of Commerce, a business membership organization with members from business from around the world in 120 countries and across sectors. We've been very actively engaged in the whole WSIS process and then in the IGF. And one of the things that I just wanted to bring into the discussion, I've talked to people in the hallways here who have never been to an IGF. And one of the interesting musings that I heard was, you know, is this a competitor to ICANN? Is this IGF going to be a competitor in the sphere? And I thought it would be really perhaps helpful to be very clear that from a business perspective, one of the unique qualities of the IGF is the fact that it is a watering hole. It is a place where we have an opportunity to hear from the OECD, from ICANN, from ISOC, from a number of organizations at the global level and regional levels that are working on these issues. And it's a special place where a lot of people who would never come together or never cross each other's path actually have a chance to exchange, find out what the other ones are working on, what are your areas of expertise, who can I call when I need information. And a lot of our members have really benefited from that kind of interaction and have been able to carry that contact home and make use of the information that they've heard at the IGF. But also, they've been able to then go and get more involved. And we have some lovely examples of people who have come to an IGF and now are very involved in ICANN. And so there's a wonderful kind of weaving and cross-pollination, which if you took the IGF out of the landscape, there would be no other place for that kind of interaction and cross-pollination to happen. So from a business perspective, even if we started out our experience in the IGF with a bit of a question mark, how's this going to work, what's going to happen, over the course of the 5 years, our commitment to the IGF and our interest in engaging has, I think, really been strengthened. And I would just reiterate what Stefano and what our panel and moderator has said, that business really supports the continuity of the IGF and with its founding principles intact so that it can continue to improve and provide this kind of special opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Aisha.
Thanks. I just want to pick up on a point that Bill made as a result of the ISOC survey. I think that if we find the time, effort and energy, let alone the money, of getting to forums all over the world extremely difficult from my country. So the point that was made about the importance of regional and national IGFs, I think, needs to be emphasized, because that's where the people who do not have the time, effort and energy to travel can get involved. We're supporting, we expect to put together a Pacific IGF next year in Noumea in April, with a bit of luck. I think the importance of these cannot be overstated, and I just, in terms of planning for a new cycle of the IGF, it would be good to see, frankly, a more UN-supported effort going into that level. At the moment, it's very much bottom-up. I think there needs to be some top-down assistance and coordination with that effort.
I've got some hymns. Would you like to react to that?
Thank you, Nick. Frank, I really don't understand the reasoning behind your last idea that there should be more institutional involvement of United Nations. Could you dwell on this a little bit more, that we really understand what you meant by that?
Withdraw United Nations, substitute Secretariat. My apologies. Yeah. Basically, what I'm talking about is more international level coordination and support for those regional IGFs, because I think that's where the real strength in this movement comes from. Partly that is because of the bottom-up nature. The agenda is set at national and regional level, and that's valuable and important. But I think that if we're looking for and more global support for the model of multi-stakeholder non-decision-making fora for analysing and assisting with the pinpointing of issues, then that can be assisted with more coordination.
Okay, can I ask? I think this is an interesting point, because it actually takes us into territory which is quite fundamental for what the IGF is, and where the risks lie in terms of it being, if I can use the term, sucked in a little bit too much to the existing international organisations, which many of us, I think, would have a stultifying effect upon the IGF and what the IGF is about. But, Marcus.
Yes, please. Yes, I mean, this is, I totally agree, it's the most significant development that has happened over recent years, this mushrooming of regional and national initiatives. And they did happen, they were not planned. Nothing in the Tunis agenda says we should replicate this model at different levels. The Tunis agenda does mention the importance of national and regional coordination on multi-stakeholder cooperation, but it does not go into the level of detail that it says the global IGF should be replicated at different levels. But they just happened. They came up in a very bottom-up way. I was in Hong Kong last week, and there I learned that in Bangladesh they start an IGF. India will have one. They just happen, and I think it's a good thing that they do happen like that, in a very spontaneous bottom-up way. We don't have a copyright on the term IGF. We have no trademark on it, but The only thing I say is the only condition is that they happen in a truly multi-stakeholder fashion, otherwise it would not be an IGF. And let me add another thing. First time I heard it, I was in the East African IGF where somebody said, irrespective of what happens at the global level, whether or not the global IGF continues, we will continue with our regional IGF. It is important to us. We have to do this discussion. So having said all that, and also to the ISOC survey, we will do more on that. We will give more space to the regional IGFs and national IGFs in Vilnius. They all will be given a slot where they can present themselves. We will have a session right at the beginning where we have a panel with representatives of the regional IGFs, and we will give them a slot where they can have a meta discussion on precisely on how better to interact at the global level to go in that way you are suggesting. But I think whatever will happen, it will remain a bottom-up initiative. We, as a global IGF, it can be a kind of clearinghouse for these initiatives, but we will not be able, I think, to provide a sort of top-down guidance, and I also don't think it would be desirable to do that. And the last word, some of them see themselves more like a PrepCom type of preparatory meeting for the global IGF, whereas others see themselves as something that may feed into the global meeting, but that has a value in itself where they do address local or regional issues that may be different from the global agenda. One issue that came up, and I noticed that already in the very first UK IGF, there was a very strong focus on social inclusion, which is not an issue we deal with at the global level because we think there are other institutions there that are dealing with it, Global Alliance, ITU, the whole WISIS follow-up. But there seems to be a very strong desire to discuss these issues in a multi-stakeholder fashion. This is something we cannot tell the regions don't do it because it's outside their remit. If they want to do it, they will do it. And I think it's a good thing that they also have slightly different agendas as the priorities are different from country to country and from region to region.
Thanks, Marcus. And thank you, Frank, for bringing up a useful area. Jeff, yes.
Quick point to add is, as a participant, I really think the Secretariat has encouraged the development of the national and regional IGFs to become a two-way process. So maybe in some cases it's expanding the discussion from the global IGF and bringing it back to a greater audience at the local level. But it's also, I think, by accommodating space for the inputs from the local and regional IGFs at the main IGF, you also encourage the feedback of the local perspectives back into the global discussion. And I think that's a very important two-way relationship that is actually helping to get people energized about the benefits of the national and regional. So I think that's something that you've done that really has paid off.
Yes, I think that's true. And well done, Marcus, for the role, which I think we all know he's played in pursuing that process. Sir?
For what, Bajwa? I think the regional aspect of the IGFs is more of a need-based replication of the IGF, because once we had an example of this multi-stakeholder model post-WISIS, it was an opportunity to bring in broader perspectives, broader issues at regional levels. In certain cases, like, for example, the Latin American case of the IGF, so many countries get the opportunity to sit together right very much before the IGF, look at their local issues, bring in the various multi-stakeholders, members of the multi-stakeholdership, and actually filter out issues which can be further discussed openly at the global level. And then, of course, the workshop model of the IGF is a very great opportunity to match or relate or correlate these broader and cross-cutting issues. So I think it's more of a need-based thing or an example which has been picked up from the IGF. And it, and from what I see now, that like this year, the interest for a South Asian IGF has been generated. Then country level IGFs have been generated. If you would ask how many people participate from Pakistan in the IGF, we would be hardly maybe a delegation of 10 people. But then we've been able to gather around or filter the issues that we bring to IGF. So it's more, I think, a very need-based approach which has evolved because we had a multi-stakeholder example from the post-visas process.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments. Sir, welcome.
Thank you. Ni Kweno, let's say from the at large. I think there's one small thing I'd like to raise, and that has to do with the potential for learning at that meeting, meaning that there's so many workshops going on, so many issues that normally in your local environment you may not get exposed to, and it gives a chance for people to learn. And I think capacity building was indeed one of the cross-cutting themes. So I imagine it is there, but we need to help resurface it so that people can look out for the opportunity to acquire some new knowledge at the IGF themselves, including taking it back home and so on and so forth. Thank you.
Yes, Neith, thank you. I think capacity building has got to be one of the key elements which we bring into the debate in New York. It's an area where improvements can certainly be made, and I think it might be an extremely useful approach when we're actually debating how the current arrangements in the IGF might be slightly altered to improve access, particularly for developing countries. Uncharacteristic silence. Ah, Martin.
As you say, silence and Martin don't go together. Martin Boyle from Nominet, and we're very active in the UK IGF. And actually just picking up on the national and regional IGFs on Frank March's point about remoteness. Remoteness isn't particularly a driver for us. But the comment that Bill made from the panel about the need to embed, get these ideas out and engage with people, very largely people who don't know about the IGF or don't think the IGF is necessarily relevant to them. And I think this is a very important role at the national and regional IGF level of trying to make sure that you are getting that dialogue, that you're getting the understanding. But I actually had a point that a question to ask Bill, that when he did the ISOC survey and you were getting the responses about the need to improve the global awareness of the IGF, did you have any ideas as to how that might be moved forwards at all?
Thanks, Martin. I really think it's a question of community building to a certain degree. I think it's important for people who do get to go to the global IGF to take the messages that they've heard there and the things they've learned there into their local communities and start to bring together a community around those issues as they try to make progress. That would include organizing a national and regional IGFs. I think there have been, over the past 4 years, and again this year, a lot of people who would not have normally been involved in this kind of debate attending the IGF. Quite a number of organizations do have fellowship programs and so on that bring people in, including Nominet. The question is then taking that back out and engaging with the local community to build the momentum there.
Thanks, Bill. Marcus was just reminding me that the SEU, that we ought to perhaps dwell a little bit on the relationship between multi-stakeholder ICANN and multi-stakeholder IGF, where there is a good deal of cross-fertilization, if I can use that term, but more that could be done. I think this at the moment is the only area we're going to have during this ICANN meeting where we can talk about the IGF, but there is certainly more that could be done to build bridges between the two in a rather more structured way. But let me not rant on. Irio, it's good to see you here.
Thank you, Nick. Irio Länsipura from ISOC, Finland. I just wanted to inform you that one more national internet forum, internet governance forum, will see the light of day this September. That is to say, there will be a Finnish internet forum right after the IGF in Vilnius. And we try to tie these things together, first of all, by inviting some interesting people from Vilnius to take this detour via Helsinki when they go back and participate Monday the 20th in our discussions. We also encourage those Finns who are not going to Vilnius but are going to take part in the Finnish forum to participate remotely in the Vilnius forum. So this is an interesting experiment, and let's see how it goes. Thank you.
Thanks, Hiria. Well, there you are. Advert for a Finnish IGF immediately after Vilnius. Aisha?
Nick, I think you brought up a very interesting question along with Marcus about how to strengthen the cross-pollination. I just wanted to make a comment on that. One of the things that we have found very interesting is the variety of formats that are used at the IGF. And so, for instance, I think every IGF, ICANN has an opportunity to do an open forum, which is, as I was describing, many other organizations do that as well, at the ITU, OECD, et cetera. ICC, for the first time this year, will hopefully have their proposal approved, and we'll be able to showcase the work that we've been doing on data protection and privacy issues. I think the way in which that open forum gives ICANN an opportunity to raise awareness about how you can get involved in ICANN, what are the issues being tackled at this time, how do you get involved in constituencies and that kind of thing, is one useful way. I think another really important opportunity at the IGF is bringing some of the issues and perspectives that are voiced within the ICANN community to the IGF, which is a broader range of actors, within the workshops and within the main sessions, has been a good way to share the perspectives, but also sometimes take some of the tension out of certain issues, because there's no decision that's going to be made. So everybody can really be frank and just say what you think, how you look at it, and why you believe a certain choice is the better one, or a certain way to handle a policy issue is the best way. So I think there's an interesting opportunity with the formats and the lack of decision-making in that space that really gives it a chance for the cross-pollination that you're talking about. And I think it's a very useful question for us to keep thinking about. Thanks.
Thanks, Aisha. Alejandro, you wanted to make a comment?
Thank you, Nick. I think that there are many ways to think about this very important issue. ICANN is an organization which holds meetings. The IGF is a meeting. I mean, the IGF is not an organization. The Secretariat is a well-organized shop, but the IGF is not an organization. So the way to link to these two things is the way to link an organization to meetings of something else. There's, as Aisha said very importantly, many ways of creating awareness of each other, of ICANN, the organization, and ICANN, its meetings in the IGF. I'm more cautious with the second part of Aisha's participation about taking ICANN issues to the Internet Governance Forum. I think it's very important to create awareness about these issues. It's very important to create global awareness. to raise the level of discussion, to bring in some fresh perspectives. All that, I think, is extremely healthy. The point where I stop, and I think that's a hard stop, is trying to use the newcomers to the internet governance field in the IGF to leverage the IGF as a way to circumvent or put pressure on the mechanisms of ICANN, of the CCTLDs, of the RIRs, and so forth. These have established mechanisms for policy making. We have to enrich them, we have to continue to renew and refresh them, but leveraging outside parties is less than fair play, and it introduces serious distortions in the process instead of actually enriching and reinforcing it. What we have to do here is to begin really extracting lessons from what we've learned, building ICANN and having ICANN operate, and see how much of that it can be translated to a solution of other problems than different than the coordination of the domain name system and the addressing system.
Thank you, Alejandro, for words of caution. Jeff, and then Stefano.
I was just going to add, I think there is an interesting discussion that has taken place at IGF about the role of ICANN within the broader internet governance sphere. That is a very important discussion, and to some extent I think the discussion taking place in the IGF has helped to recognize how unique the ICANN model is as a multi-stakeholder. So I think while it may not be trying to influence specific issues within ICANN, there is an overall discussion of how ICANN fits into internet governance that I think has been very important and actually very productive in helping a broader segment of those who care about internet governance to understand what ICANN does and doesn't do, and why it's important to maintain the ICANN model. So I think there's an interesting synergy of the two discussions that way.
Yes, thanks. I say I personally think that explaining to people what ICANN doesn't do is just as important as trying to tell people what ICANN does do. There's a great deal of mystery out there which we could usefully work in the IGF and in other places to dispel. Stefano first, and then you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. So the cross-fertilization between ICANN model, and that is an operational organization doing things, and the IGF, that is a forum, so it is very important, is a key, in my opinion. And we have to also, I would like to have some comments about the other process that was targeted in WISIS at ICANN in particular, but not only ICANN, that is the enhanced cooperation process that is connected to the IGFs in a way, in the sense that if you remember, in Sharm el Sheikh, there was a recognition by many delegations that de facto the results of the enhanced cooperation are verified inside IGF, while now there is a discussion about the future of IGF and also the future of enhanced cooperation, question mark. So this is an important point that Lou sees ICANN as a very important actor. In my opinion, we are in a war of position that is it will last a long time. And then we have to defend this multi-stakeholder model and to be also careful to one thing, that in many cases the government representatives that are going in Europe to Brussels and to discuss on internet governance and those that are going in Geneva to ITU meetings do not speak the same language. So we have to be careful about that and try to have, as I said, a long-standing patience in order to try to build the consensus even in the countries. It's like the problem of the conscious status and the shadow in psychological terms. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefan. I'm not sure whether we're in a war of position or attrition, but sir.
Thank you. My name is Izumi Aizu. I'm at large from Asia Pacific. Since Marcus mentioned about the recent Hong Kong's regional IGF for Asia Pacific, I'd like to just share a little bit in relation to the discussion now. We had a very short preparatory time frame from March almost to prepare for the June meeting, and we wanted to have some kind of input to the IGF processes. However, it also gave a very interesting opportunity that the Hong Kong people, the local host, prepare this as a combination of regional and national, or if it's not appropriate to say Hong Kong as national, it's a local, depends. So that it was very informative to both the Hong Kong people taking the opportunity. But also I'd like to highlight the fact that four of the ICANN's chairpersons participated, out of which three are from our own region of Asia-Pacific, namely the board, Peter, and NOMCOM, which is Wolfgang from Europe, but also CCNSO, and at large, Chris Disipen and Cheryl Langdon-Orr. So it gave a very interesting opportunity for these people and also ICANN, because some people from Laos, Myanmar or Burma, Cambodia, and these where you normally don't see the people from to the IGF or to ICANN also have participated. So it's not only the outreach from ICANN's or IGF's perspective to go and talk to these people, but also it's kind of inreach that we could listen from these people about their policy issues, which we can take into the global IGFs. And we have a very productive roundtable discussion on many various topics within a few very much short time. We took a lot of lessons from the format of ICANN meetings as well as IGF meetings to sort of raise the quality of the discussion. So these are kind of the two-way learning processes I observed that I'd like to share. Thank you.
And thank you. Yanis, before I come to you, and then you, sir.
Thank you, Nick. I wanted to react on a couple of things. We need to understand the fundamental difference between IGF and ICANN. And from that understanding also stems the possible cooperation between ICANN and IGF. Both multi-stakeholder models, but one is discussion forum, another is decision-making body. Or decision-making organization, and as such, completely different in nature. ICANN is a very narrow-minded organization with a very specific task, though it
open,
seems like...
Open-minded with narrow mission.
Yeah, sorry, open-minded with narrow mission.
I'm not getting into this one.
IGF is very wide. Let's say the agenda of IGF is very, very wide. Again, that is difference. And there might be cooperation in terms of subjects which are addressed in both organizations. And ICANN certainly can use IGF to educate participants on ICANN's role, ICANN's mission, what ICANN does, what ICANN does not. But I don't see any institutional cooperation even distantly possible. ICANN's interest is to support IGF because ICANN uses IGF as a platform for self promotion, if I may say, but not really vice versa, because of the nature. Concerning the term enhanced cooperation was mentioned, and I want to be very clear about that. VISIS did not decide anything about enhanced cooperation. This is kind of popular perception that there was something decided about enhanced cooperation. What this is decided was decided to ask Secretary General launch a process leading towards enhanced cooperation, which is completely different to enhanced cooperation. So for those who are interested in this historical development or the history of the question, I can tell you that there was a proposal of establishment of a new model of cooperation in the, I think it was very early in PrepCom, and that a new model of cooperation was rejected as an unworkable proposal. But since it was already in public domain, some kind of fallback position or compromise was needed. And it was negotiated back and forth, and a new model of cooperation turned into a process leading towards enhanced cooperation. So that is the true story about this subject. And today we're very much in discussions, and the opinions are divided whether enhanced cooperation should be some kind of process, centralized process, or that should be some kind of decentralized process. And that is what we're struggling now to agree upon. And seems that we're it is a long way to go to find agreement. And there might be another World Summit who will be discussing this issue further.
No comment on the delights of another World Summit. Was your question on this issue? Okay, please.
Not particularly. It's a comment, not particularly on this. The enhanced cooperation.
Which case, can I come back to you, because I know Marcus wants to talk about this. Did you want to address this issue?
Enhanced cooperation.
Yes.
Or ICANN.
Well, ICANN and IGF. So please, and then I'll ask Marcus to make a comment, and then I'll come back to you.
I'm Bill Drake from the GNSO Council, representative of NCSG. I'd like to disagree with my old friend Alejandro. This is an argument that we've been having for 5 years since we were on the UN Working Group on Internet Governance. I think the notion that we have to protect ICANN from open debate at the IGF, and that it's unfair if somebody tries to leverage the opportunities of IGF to criticize ICANN, is something we really need to get past. And I actually think we have been getting past it. You know, ICANN is not that fragile. I think it can handle it. I think it can handle a little bit of criticism. Moreover, I would suggest to you that by refusing in the early days of the IGF, or at least attempting to limit the extent to which ICANN and critical internet resources were discussed, I think all that did was actually to fuel more suspicion of ICANN among those parties that are not engaged in it. They thought there was some mysterious thing going on there. It's this weird cabal that's off doing some hocus-pocus thing, smoke and mirrors and whatever, and we can't find out what's going on, and why won't they let us talk about it? And it just made some people kind of almost feed on themselves and this, you know, perception that ICANN was some really remote entity, and it didn't help. And what we actually found once we started to talk about ICANN in a more open way is that, in fact, it mollified a lot of people. It made a lot of people confront the issues and think them through and realize that some of the things they were saying actually weren't that sensible. And in fact, the more people get engaged in the discussion, the more they start to realize that maybe some of their a priori suppositions about ICANN don't really match the facts. There are people in civil society that I deal with all the time who are very critical of ICANN, who have never been to an ICANN meeting, and I wish they would come. And I wish they, because if they did, they would probably find out that a lot of the things they imagine are happening here aren't, and that there is a much more participatory and open culture than they realize. The other point I would make is, just as a general matter, I really think ICANN should be leveraging the opportunities of the IGF much more. And in particular, it needs to do this, I think, vis-a-vis outreach to developing countries, because we found this very, very difficult within the boundaries of the traditional ICANN meeting structure to figure out how to do this. We had a workshop in Nairobi that Jean-Jacques organized under the public participation group of the board about how to reach out to developing countries. And I looked around, and it was 50 of the usual suspects. We were in Nairobi. There were very few Africans in the room. And I talked with a couple of people later, and I said, well, why didn't you come to that session? They said, you know, you look at the program, it's like there's this Excel page, there's a little box, it says something about participation. I didn't know what it was. We don't do a good job of just making the information transparent to people in the first place, for any newbie. But especially for developing country people, I think it's really, really important. It's the key issue, I think, for the future, that we have to find a way to promote more effective engagement by developing country people. And that's why the IGF lends itself to that. I'm organizing a workshop on development aspects of names and numbers. We have a main session that's going to be on IG4D. I think we should do much more in this area, and hopefully that will feed back into ICANN and enrich the discussion in ICANN. That's what I'd like to see.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Please.
The hidden or the invisible link that is being created for the future, I would say, currently and the future, between this connection of IGF and ICANN is, for example, one example is the ICANN Fellowship Program, which brings in people from developing countries. And these people go through an extensive training activity as well every morning. And they're brought into the core of what's happening at ICANN, introduced to ICANN, core of what is happening in ICANN, and how they can participate. Okay, I came into the IGF because of a capacity building program by Diplo. From there, questions arose in my mind. Where's the missing link between IGF and ICANN? And that encouraged me to participate in the ICANN Fellowship Program, again from Pakistan. And within two fellowships, I graduated. And what does graduation mean? Graduation means that you move on into the ICANN core community processes. And currently, in my third ICANN meeting, I'm currently elected vice chair of the Asia-Pacific at large organization. And now this is that invisible link, which is being created at the background. If you look around the room, you'll see many young faces. All these young faces are part of the fellowship program. Now, an enhanced opportunity is something I would like to mention, the Internet Society's Next Generation Leadership Program, which is actually looking at both sides of the picture and trying to create that opportunity whereby ICANN knowledge can be transferred into IGF, IGF knowledge can be transferred into ICANN. But the difference will remain that the IGF is an open discussion space, and ICANN is where critical decisions are being taken with regards to critical internet resources. But once again, I think if we explore means whereby we can also build capacity during the IGF on certain issues, we can group together the fellowship programs, the various fellowship programs that are taking place, and offer this replication from ICANN into the IGF. I think that will create that future lot that you need to build that bridge. Why? Number one thing. Currently, it's one thing. We have to look at where the internet is in 10 years. These people are going to be the faces that are going to sit on these positions within the next 10 years. So this is an important component, the fellowship, their capacity building, and their inclusion in the core leadership of both of these organizations.
Okay, thank you very much. Marcus, you wanted to offer a comment, I think?
Just to pick up on Fuad's comment, I think it's a very nice narrative you gave on your role, how you came in from the IGF to Diplo to IGF and then to ICANN. There are many other examples like that, and there is a lot of capacity building going on. These fellowship program, the ISOC ambassador program, young leaders program, the Diplo Foundation, we have our own program with the Diplo Foundation, and they are fellows there who go back to their community, who move up in their ranks. One of our former fellows is now on the board of AFRINIC. That sort of thing happens, and these are great narratives. Maybe they're not visible enough, but for when you go to New York, you can say a lot of capacity building is already happening, but it may not be noticed. And the IGF itself is I think a big example of collective capacity building anyway. But the point I was going to make was I was going to look at the other from another angle. Does it matter to ICANN whether the IGF exists or not? I agree on all that has been said. Yes, of course, the ICANN has a totally different task. ICANN is operational with a deep but narrow remit, whereas the IGF is a platform for discussion with a broad and shallow remit in a way. We have our very broad discussions, but we don't dig that much deeper. But does it matter to ICANN? And my answer would be, yes, it does matter. Bill made a point, the outreach. It is an excellent platform for ICANN to reach out, to bring in people from developing countries, people who may be a little bit shy to go to an ICANN meeting, but to come to an IGF meeting because it has this UN flag which gives them comfort. So this is one aspect. And the other aspect, it was the chairman of the board made the point that in Hong Kong, the issues discussed at the IGF are issues people want to discuss. There's a need to discuss these broader issues related to the internet, which are not part of the ICANN mandate. If they were not discussed in the IGF, they would creep into ICANN. You would all of a sudden have the need, people would like to address content issues, discuss freedom of expression, and ICANN is not an organization dealing with content. This is clearly outside the mandate, and it would dilute the role of ICANN if you start discussing this. And then the last point, I think ICANN has an interest that all these issues are discussed in a multi-stakeholder format and not in an intergovernmental format. And without the IGF, it would invariably be discussed more in an intergovernmental setting.
Thanks, Marcus. I think that's the fundamental, isn't it? ICANN equals multi-stakeholder, IGF equals multi-stakeholder. Let's encourage the cross-fertilization. You're pointing to your left. Sorry, did you want the floor?
I wanted to ask
Yeah, press the red button.
I think I have pretty loud voice. So perhaps I just don't need it. I don't know if
it can be somehow. Oh, okay. Thank you. Ala Ulgu, Republic of Moldova. So it's like a voice, let's say, from the developing countries. I'm a participant of fellowship program. I'm first time at the ICANN meeting, and we are talking here about it. There is a need to raise up awareness. There is a need for cooperation, etc., etc. Yes, it's very nice. So from my point of view, the second question has to be, how to raise up awareness? Let's talk about instruments available for us, especially for us from developing countries, because as I know, from Moldova, the ICANN took part only 3 persons, and I found out about them through ICANN, through the internet. But besides developing countries, here is also developed countries, representative from developed countries, where awareness of what ICANN is doing is, I think so, is much more. Because even if we look about where is the concentrated registrars, it's in the developed countries. It means they know what is happening here, what take place. So I would like to ask perhaps everybody here who has experience, how, what instruments we can use to raise up awareness.
Thank you very much indeed for that question. Well, there you are. It's out there. Awareness raising. Zahid? Yes, you just did. You just did.
Sorry. There we go. Thank you. I'm supposed to be a technical person, maybe. slightly sort of segueing through Bill's point, Bill Drake's point about outreach, etc., and I've heard a lot about awareness, but I'd like to sort of focus a little bit on the importance of ICANN's perception at IGF. We all hear at the IGF about various things that ICANN is doing about the transparency, the accountability, and all these issues. And I think the IGF is a great opportunity to expose and engage a broader and a diverse community rather than who come to ICANN, because there's a lot more deep dive here, a lot more technical aspects over here. And I just want to hark back to the lengthy discussions at the IGF on the JPA and the transition. Now, in that context, now that we have an AOC, it may be very useful to think about how do we get the information and provide more feedback to people at IGF about what the AOC is, one, two, and what the accountability and transparency review teams are doing. And the importance of that is because people at ICANN still may not necessarily know how accountability and transparency is being implemented through the ICANN process, and maybe to rather than have pressure built up on other issues apart from the JPA, it may be a very good idea to give people at the IGF some view about what the accountability and transparency review teams are doing, and they may benefit from them, because at times the perceptions, or let's say the misperceptions they may have about how ICANN may be functioning, may be dealt with by exposing them to the information about the review teams. And I think this can work both ways. One, benefiting the people who come to the IGF, and also maybe if the review team members are there, for them to get an idea of what the broader community thinks about ICANN itself.
Thank you. Thank you for that. It is our intention to make sure that the IGF is given a report and brought up to speed on what is happening with the implementation of the affirmation, and that means the work of the transparency and review teams. But again, I think we are at one in saying that ICANN, as you said, sir, ICANN's got nothing to hide. ICANN's grown up and should be out there and can withstand the criticism. We get quite a lot of that, but the IGF is a place for us to sell ourselves. You, madam, and then you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Is it working? Yes. About the issue raised by our friend from Moldova, our fellow friend from Moldova, thanks for raising this about awareness. Some of you may know already about an initiative that we are doing in Latin America, which is the South School of Internet Governance. And I want to thank some organizations that have helped us in doing it. It's ISOC, it's NIC Chile, LACNIC, Nominet, and some others, ICANN. With some contributions, we could grant fellowships to students coming to our training program, which is about 1 week long. We had decided to have a model of rotating countries, so we give the opportunity to different students and young professionals to participate from different places. We did the first one in Argentina in 2009. The second one was in Sao Paulo this year in March, and we plan to do the third one in Mexico in 2011. It has been quite successful in bringing younger professionals and students to our program. So just if you're interested, you're from Latin America and interested in participating, just let me know, and thank to all those that made it possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed for that, sir.
First, let me identify myself. My name is Jamie Wagner. I'm with the GNSO Council. I'm from Brazil. I represent the private sector in the Internet Steering Committee of Brazil, governance of the Internet. But I would like to add an odd note to what is being said about awareness of the ICANN. ICANN is not only a governance body. It is much more of the DNS part of Internet. And this is not only governance, it is mainly a market. So when we talk about awareness in the developing countries, it should be much be said that to integrate private money focused actors from these countries would be a good thing to ICANN. And this would increase awareness of ICANN's mission, and they should come here with this mindset also. And there is the governance part, but there is also the market part that is taking place. And this is something that we from the developing countries should take awareness of. And when I first came to ICANN, this was something that I quite didn't really understood. And I think there are broader issues that should be tackled, and these follow in the IGF, and some part also they belong to ICANN. When, because we also in ICANN, this DNS structure is not only a market, but it is crucial to the functioning and identification. Virtual identification of everybody in the world. So there are two things: a market and an essential and very fundamental operation for the internet to go. So these two things go along but apart, and this is something that I would like to say just to the people that are coming, that are new to the to this forum.
Thank you very much. I'm going to give the floor to Bill, and then I will ask the panelists. We're running out of time. I'll ask the panelists to each have a quick 1 minute roundup. Bill?
Just quickly to underscore the point that Olga made, the South Summer School is actually a spinoff of the European Summer School. We're having our fourth this year. We're also going to be doing, we've done one in Egypt, we're going to be doing it in Asia. This is actually an important outcome that I think, further to what Marcus said about the kind of capacity building that maybe isn't seen, the UN needs to be aware. This is a big spinoff from the IGF effort. You've got hundreds of students applying for every one of these installments of the summer school and coming, and many of them end up being in the GAC and other places. The other point I want to make, though, just if I can just be a little controversial since we're finishing, the capacity building and awareness raising is not a one-way street. I think one of the things that ICANN also could really benefit from is to get some people from the ICANN community to participate in IGF to find out how people outside the community are thinking about some of these things. Because quite frankly, and I don't want to sound too controversial, but you know, many of the, for example, business people that I know through ICANN don't necessarily follow what's happening in the international political environment so much. And so when I talk to them about broader internet governance issues, they say, oh, we don't want the ITU involved, full stop, that's the end of the discussion. But there's more to it than that, obviously. Governments around the world have a lot of concerns about different types of issues. I think we have to be aware of what those concerns are, so do other stakeholders. And because of the nature of the agendas and what we have time to talk about in ICANN meetings, a lot of those issues don't ever come into the agenda here in a way that's structured and organized and helps people get a fuller appreciation of how the institution is being viewed externally and how it might optimally position itself from a political standpoint. So I think that we need to recognize learning goes in both directions, and we should all engage in that way. Thank you.
Thanks. I hate to disappoint you, but I don't think that's terribly controversial. I think you're right. Can I start the other way around? Bill, why don't you just give us a one-minute review of what you think of this, the outcome of this exercise.
Thanks, Nick. I feel this has been a very useful discussion, and I think I've heard a lot of good points come up here. I think the concentration on the linkage between the IGF and the real world, if I can put it that way, is the major thing I'd take away from this. And two things there, I guess. Yes, there is a real need to build awareness, but there's also a responsibility on the part of people who take part in the IGF and other internet governance processes to build awareness in their home territories. And while we're doing commercials, I'll just toss in a quick one for the Internet Society's Next Generation Leaders Program, where we're starting to do a major training exercise to try and increase the awareness and the capacity at that intersection of technology and policy that that's so vital. And you can see that at internetsociety.org. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Bill. Jeff, your commercial-free input?
Actually, I was going to try and sneak in a commercial as well, but I would emphasize, I think, the benefit of the synergy between IGF and ICANN and encourage all business people who, if you've come to ICANN and not participated in IGF, to really do that. I agree with Bill. I think we really need to be aware and sensitive as business people of the political environment and of the policy environment as well. But I would also say there's an opportunity for both IGF and ICANN to keep working on the development and participation, and there's not a silver bullet solution, but I do think both organizations have done some creative, novel approaches, and what I see seems to work really well is when business people from developing countries start to engage in both, there really can be a multiplier effect. And I was just going to add that we are working with the Diplo Foundation on a report on actually trying to document some of the developments of the national and regional IGFs to help get those firsthand stories out there more, and maybe the training sessions would be another thing to add to that report as well.
That's good ideas there. Marcus?
I think I've said enough, you know.
Okay, thank you,
Marcus. Found it a very useful session.
Alejandro?
Very briefly, I agree with Bill Gregg. In fact, what we see as the IGF develops and the advisory group makes the program for the meeting with more and more knowledge is that people who are just trying to use the IGF for some other purpose instead of, I mean, the purposes of the IGF itself are weeded out. They don't get audiences for the workshops, and they don't get the workshops next year. So, yeah, this openness is definitely helpful to all, and what we all want is to make better use of the time and not get locked in issues. I'll finalize by saying that we are realizing that minutes and narratives coming out of regional or national IGFs are going to provide an example. If we look at how they're made during this year, they will provide an example of exactly why we have to keep these forums open. If there's going to be a single 10-minute report coming from a region, someone's going to be hammering at that text, and someone's going to be negotiating and pulling one way or another to make sure words get said in a single way, and that will show exactly what we don't need, how that will begin to close minds and alienate people from meetings. What we want is a very broad outreach.
Thank you, Alejandro. Yanis?
In the same line, we need to, whatever developments will be in the future, we need to preserve the multi-stakeholder, informal character of the IGF, because the very moment the decision will be made to start negotiate outcome, that's the imminent dead of this initiative. And secondly, we need to find a way how to make funding of the forum or secretariat sustainable, and make sure that through this funding we could attract more and fund more participation of different stakeholders from developing and least developed countries, where the real need of IGF lies. So these are two concluding remarks.
Yanis, thank you, and thank you all my colleagues up here on the panel. Thank you, audience. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for being here. My final comment is to repeat what I said earlier. You are the multi-stakeholders, but it's the governments who've got the votes in the United Nations. So please, can I suggest that you all make your views known to your governments to ensure that they take a properly knowledgeable and a properly informed decision in New York this autumn. Thank you all very much for coming.